Hi everyone, it's Jenny and Lorraine back again with this week's Sensory Matters.
Hi.
Hiya, how are you?
I'm all right, thank you.
Yeah, all good, thank you. So this week I had the pleasure of chatting to Tom from Autistic Genius. We had a great chat about all sorts of things, so you're going to hear his story coming up. And he has some great tips in there that you want to gonna listen to. At the time, his baby was due, and we were scared he was going to have to run out the room in case his wife was about to give birth. But thankfully, we managed to get through the interview with no hiccups. But since then, we're thrilled to announce, as you probably all know, he's had a little baby boy called Billy. So Tom is now a dad and loving it by all accounts, having seen his videos and things.
Yeah, it's amazing. When you watch them, he's always whispering, so he doesn't
whisper. No. Yeah, absolutely. So he gave us a bit of a fright, actually, after we interviewed him, because he decided that he was jacking in Facebook, but his wife persuaded him to come back, and we're glad he did.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So what have we got coming up on the page and the groups?
Well, in the Sensory Support Group, we've got a community success story from a guy called Luke. We have... In the VIC group, we've got Mo going live on Tuesday, and this week she's going to be in Norway because she's off skiing.
Brilliant.
We've got Bernadette teaching us Makaton in the VIC group. Jamie will be going live in the Sensory Support Group this week. She's moving from the Facebook page to the Sensory Support Group on Sunday.
Okay.
And we've got a public transport hack from Casper in the VIC group, and he's also reviewing the hand fidget. And the amazing thing is the public transport hack that Casper's done for us is the very first video that he ever did.
Right.
And he's been doing quite a few videos since then. So I wanted to put it on there so that people could see how much he's grown and how his confidence has come on, because it's amazing. So when you see the public transport hack in comparison to the hand fidget one, you'll just be amazed.
Oh, brilliant. Good on you, Casper. Excellent. Right. So let's have a listen and see what Tom and I chatted about.
We love Annette, we love a chat. We love to help, and that's a fact. So we have made it our mission to find stuff out. From diagnosis and education, slimming out of pure frustration. Chat to folks who've been there too. Collect it together and share it with you. If you know someone we should speak to, send them our way, and that's what we'll do. We like to have our sensory natters. You know what?
Right, hello. I am Jenny from Chewy Gem, and we are doing a show called Sensory Matters, and we are absolutely thrilled to have Tom of Autistic Genius with us here today. Hi,
hello.
Tom.
Hello.
Hello. Now, Tom might have to run because he's due a baby in any minute. So if we have to stop this, it's because his wife goes into labour. So hopefully that won't happen. I think we're a few weeks away, but... Who knows?
I hope so.
Yeah. Are you feeling ready?
Can you really feel ready for a baby?
No.
I think we've got all the stuff.
Yeah.
We're prepared.
Good.
I don't think you can be ever proper ready for a baby, because you don't know what they're going to be like.
No, that's true. Okay, well, we'll maybe come back and talk about baby and wife in a bit, but you were telling me earlier about a story you had when you were younger which relates to autism and literal thinking. Can you tell us a bit about that, please?
Yeah, it's pretty dumb. But when I was... Because where I live, we have three-tier schools. So when you get to year nine, which is about 13, 14, you have to start high school. And my mum decided that because of a lot of children went to that school near me, we had to get a bus. So she said, if he's going out on his own, doing everything on his own, he needs a phone.
Sensible.
So they took me to the phone shop, my stepdad. Everyone chipped in, like family. So it was a phone. So I got to choose it. I got to be there. So I was fully involved in it. And it was only play as you go, like a 3310, the old ones.
Yeah.
And I went, going through it all. It goes on. It was like buying a car back then. It goes on forever. And the bloke said, I can't believe this happened. I didn't get it at the time. But the bloke said, would you like insurance cover? Or no, would you like the insurance cover? And I said, no, I'd like the Spider-Man cover. And at the top, and... I was completely like clueless, but obviously it became this amazingly hilarious story forever and ever and ever, and it's still told.
Yeah, I bet.
I think my mum still tells it. That was one of my many dumb literal thinking moments.
Yeah, absolutely. Brilliant. And that's quite a common trait, isn't it? Lorraine tells me a lot of stories about... Lorraine tells me a lot of stories about little thinking and taking things literally as well.
It's so worrying.
Yeah.
And, like, I find now that when I was younger, when I was growing up, I found, like, sarcasm was more obvious.
Oh, really?
A lot of people now are very much... Whereas I find people who get older, they become much drier.
Yeah.
And much more very serious with it. Because, obviously, they either get better at it or they... Well, that's just, well, it's just, yeah, they just get better and that's them growing up and they're not as energetic and silly and expressive. So that's, yes, you can sometimes, but now I find it harder to get it.
Oh, really?
It's really bizarre. Ooh. Because I found when you're younger, people have got more energy about them and stuff, your peers. But when they're older, people are much more serious and a bit more drier.
So you think it gets harder as you get older then?
Yeah, and it does and it doesn't. But I think that as well with television,
mm-hmm.
like the way we do like comedies, for example, which everyone worships, everybody, what I think a lot of people will watch those things and learn from them. And I find that especially a lot of American stuff, it's very over the top.
Yeah.
I think sometimes because autistic people are very literal, they find it difficult to relate that to real life, separate. So that's probably part of it as well.
Yeah, and I guess as adults, we probably mask our true feelings a bit more. And so a child is much more obvious in what they're really thinking, which would make it easier to read. Totally.
And if you react to your feelings there and then, you can be considered a baby or a wuss.
Yeah, yeah.
I agree with that. But you can be considered a wuss, a wimp, a snowflake, or whatever. So... That's another one as well. People feel they have to hide it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they're kind of dumb.
So from what I know about you, you weren't diagnosed until you were 16. So what was...
Yeah, that's about right.
About right. So what was life like before that?
I was so oblivious to everything.
Yeah?
Just... Mom used to say, like, this is what people think about you. This is how people see you. And I just didn't care. Just didn't care. I was completely oblivious to everything around me, what people thought, how people thought. I just was me. And I was always different. I always felt like I knew I was not different to the others. I didn't know what I was. I just knew I was.
Could you see those differences yourself when you were younger? Or was it just a feeling?
I knew I didn't fit in, and I knew I was a bit of a whip, and I knew I wasn't, like, because I found a lot of people at school, I find sometimes a lot of people at school have a real big group of friends, and they knew everyone at school, and everybody knew everyone, and I was kind of out of that. I had just a very small group, whereas a lot of people seemed to know everyone.
So
I didn't really like that. I didn't really... But that's just who I was. I wasn't really bothered by the social conform of it. So I just naturally stayed out of it. I wasn't anxious about it.
Yeah.
I just naturally stayed away from it.
And you went to mainstream school?
Yeah, went all through mainstream, yeah. I was badly behaved when I was younger. I reckon I was nearly excluded.
Okay. What sort of behaviours were they?
I was just hated school and played up. I was probably rude. I probably hit some kids. I hit people. I wasn't picked on because I used to just hit them, no matter who they were. And then there was I just couldn't focus. Hated it, and if I didn't get it, didn't want to know. I didn't want to know.
Yeah, just not interested.
I didn't see the point to it. Didn't think it was relevant. I ain't gonna do it.
So what happened to make was it your parents that pursued a diagnosis, or did you kind of come and say I feel different, or what happened? How did it all pan out?
It was all my mum.
Okay.
My mum always knew that was something. She says there was something not quite right. That's how she used to word it, because she didn't know how to word it.
Yeah.
She always knew there was something up, because I wasn't like others. She knew it as well. So she just knew, and she was pushing for it. And I don't know if she came up with autism herself along the way, or she just kept telling people there's something not right. And mm-hmm. people just didn't see it because I was smart enough. I had friends and stuff like that. So I was ticking the school boxes. So I don't know whether I was lost in the... Sometimes I think I was let down by the system.
Okay.
I should have been spotted because there are some characteristics about me that are very obvious. But also, one of them. I think I was badly behaved, and I think that I wasn't really bad. I wasn't, like, dangerous.
No.
But I think it overlooked it, and people just didn't see through it.
So it's the classic thing of people thinking it's just bad behaviour rather than something else going on.
When it's 30 to a class.
Yeah. And I guess a lot of schools, you know, you say, what did you just say a minute ago, that there were some obvious traits and you feel a little bit let down. But I guess it depends on the staff and their knowledge in the school. And, you know, when were you at school? A decade ago, maybe?
Yeah. I left 2005. I finished school. When I was born.
Yeah.
Was the era of the vaccines.
Oh, yeah.
Was when it all kicked off.
Uh-huh.
Like, they do this, they do that. And it was all that sort of period, like the 80s, and then the 90s, where it was all like, and, you know. And me and quite a few others are the first real, when autism started to become more of a knowledgeable.
Yeah.
We're kind of like the first generation of people to have grown up from the major start of all the diagnoses, which is probably why autism's just kind of exploded. Because they're all the ones, you know what I mean? All the youngsters who started getting diagnosed more have grown up. So it's almost like a start of a revolution.
It is a bit, isn't it? There's been like a huge awakening of knowledge much more easily recognised now, even compared to when you were at school.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It was, I don't know how it used to be. I mean, I remember I'm pretty sure ADHD was a myth when I was at school.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure people heard of it, but I'm pretty sure that's a myth. That was dyslexia. I don't think I even heard that word.
Yeah. I think a lot of it is just used. I remember people saying things like, oh, it's just something people say to excuse bad behaviour. That was kind of the attitude to it for a long time.
Disabled children, very rare in schools.
Yes.
When I was growing up.
Same.
I mean, like, there was always one, and it was a big deal.
Yeah.
It was a big deal. All the kids just loved them. They looked after them. They were so excited. You know, they thought it was great having something different, someone different, something that's unique.
Yeah.
They love it. Yeah, you love it. But it was very rare. I didn't really notice the change in that sort of area until my brother went to school because we were 11 years difference.
Right.
So when he started school, I was coming towards the end of school, and like you started to see like people like with Down syndrome starting mainstream school and stuff like that, and that was to me unusual.
Yeah.
It's good, but it was unusual, and I suppose that's amazing how far things moved on since I left school.
Totally. So going back to the diagnosis, how long did that take? What was that process like?
As I said, when I was young, I was very oblivious. I remember going to see someone, and I remember going to see somebody else, and that's about it.
Right.
I'm pretty sure I went to the GP quite a few times about certain things and got referred and that.
Yeah.
I believe my mum went private in the end.
Right. Okay.
Because she heard about a guy who was very, very good. I had to travel quite a while to see him. So I think that's what happened in the end. I remember seeing somebody quite local with the children's centre.
Mm-hmm.
And he set up a group for kids with autism. So we met up and chatted about things. So, yeah, that's what I remember, really.
Yeah.
There might have been more behind the scenes. I remember someone coming to visit the school and assessing me as well.
Right. So it sounds like your mum was pretty supportive and determined to do the right thing.
And I remember the day when we went in, and I think she just cried. because it was like the first time someone listened to her.
Yeah.
Like, literally someone said, you're not talking rubbish.
Yeah.
So, like, I think it was just like, it took so long.
So do you think then getting a diagnosis made a difference to you?
Yeah, it does. It didn't really notice the difference until I was like really 18.
Okay.
When I started to actually get help. And it was nice to actually get help. And
what sort of help?
Also as well, I one-to-one support with like work outside the college lessons and stuff.
Yeah.
And it was amazing to actually realise how unprepared I was after leaving school. I mean, I didn't do, you know, fair enough, I didn't put effort in, but actually I didn't, I felt leaving school, I was unprepared for the world, big time. And I was capable, I did stuff that everyone else did and that, but I got a lot of help. When I became 18, I started to meet other people with autism and work with other people who and the supporting, like, was specialised in autism. And we started to learn more about people, and that was when you started to realise like how we work and how our brains sort of work and stuff. It was pretty good.
Yeah. And do you find now that you're friends with a lot of these people? You've you know what I mean? That you've kind of seen a way into another world, and
yeah, it's weird. You start realising how you see the world, and that you should really treasure the way you see it, because you see it that way for a reason. It's not a bad thing.
No.
You need to treasure it, and it is like a journey. Like, you are on a, it is self discovery.
Yeah.
Like, it's good. It is really good. I mean, I've been, it's initially, I get why people get upset about diagnosis, because sometimes the label is quite scary.
Yeah.
Didn't bother me. But I think you just got to be positive and go out and learn about it.
Yeah.
Which I never did, actually, initially. I should have earlier, but just didn't.
But that's you know, an interesting thing. The whole, I saw a thread on Facebook a while ago chatting about the pros and cons of getting a diagnosis. And some people are very much like, they definitely don't want it, even though they know that's probably what they've got. They don't want it because they don't want that label. And other people are very much, well, it's not a label, it's just a fact of who I am. And if that gets me access to the support I need, you know, that's what it is. And then you get into the whole thing of what's the right thing to say. You know, do you face that as well? In terms of, I always get confused between whether you call someone, is someone, so do I refer to you as, you're a person with autism, or do I refer to you as autistic? And one of my big frustrations in this is, I know people have strong opinions on either way, but my personal view is that we almost need to shelve that and just let people talk about it. Whether they get it right or wrong is semantics. It's more about getting it out in the open.
Exactly, yeah. I think you call yourself what you want. I don't really care. I mean, no matter what you call me, I'm autistic.
Yeah.
So there's no real right or wrong way about it. You know, I'm not protective over it. I'm not going to tell you what, how to say things. If I think you're offensive, if you say something that's offensive and I think you're wrong, I'll say, yeah, I think you're wrong.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to tell you that you can't say that. That's because that's not how it works.
Yeah.
But no matter what you say and what you do, I'm autistic.
Yeah.
And I think if people don't want the diagnosis, I think they need to be told the benefits of having a diagnosis.
And what do you see those as being?
Well, the rules change. Like, you have no idea. Like, I found out about, like, you know, the police, they do the autism stuff. They want to know if you're autistic or not.
Yeah.
If you're arrested or involved with the police in any, have to be involved in a police investigation, you tell them you're autistic, because they're trained in how to, and in like lying and this, that, and the other. And the police, I think, worked out that autistic people can come across like they're guilty when they're not. So if you tell them you're autistic, they're aware.
Yeah.
So if you do something that may be perceived as that you're lying, they might go, he's autistic, we have to consider it. Also, if you're autistic and you're involved with the police, you can choose an adult to be present.
Yeah.
So say if I was arrested, I could say I want my mum there.
Yeah.
And she has to go, and they can't stop it. And, you know, I've got, and that's brilliant. She can't contribute. Mm-hmm. She can't say anything, but she could be there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's, things like that make it just, and that's things like that. And like, it's probably things like driving. Learning to drive, it could benefit that, maybe. I don't think it does, because I think you just got to learn. When you go to school, when you go to college, when you get education, well, if you're autistic and you go to uni, you get a laptop, you get a computer for free.
Yeah.
What is that? And that's just simply because you've been told you're autistic. And we do need it. We do need it. I got a free one.
Yeah.
All I needed it. It's dead now because it was ages ago.
I guess in the workplace as well, if you go into kind of mainstream work,
God, yeah.
It becomes very important.
People don't like it when this happens, but we are autistic and we are underneath protection as regard to disability. So we have people that like being called disabled when they're autistic, which I get, but you have to remember we are protected under disabilities in a sense.
Yes.
So in the workplace, if a boss says something to you, or does something, you can say that's not right, but also you have to just, but then also you're disabled, and you can be nasty and malicious and play the card, but it does change the rules. And if you're disabled, it makes them double check things and make sure you read it correctly. So you've just got. You do get more support in a lot of areas, but what I will say is you are treated like everybody else.
Yeah.
So I think you get the extra support and the help that you will need, but you're not treated any better or any worse. You're just treated the same.
Yeah, so just like if someone had a back issue and needed a standing desk, they would get a standing desk. You know what I mean? So, but if you've got autism, then maybe you need to work in the quiet part of the office or something like that, and they'll accommodate you.
Yeah, there's things that they can do, but what people have to remember as well, they're only a company. You know, they're not. There's only so much they can do, and like if you've got employers, they have to work within the policy, and they have to be advised by professionals as well.
Yeah.
So I think with autism, it's so difficult because it is one individual case. Like, for example, a physical disability, like you said.
Yeah.
It's straight cut, isn't it? You got a wheelchair. Make sure that they can get in and out.
Yeah.
Make sure they can do this. Clear cut. Wheelchair's a wheelchair. But autism, it's not clear cut. One person with autism might have to be out of the way, hidden.
Yeah.
The other one might not care.
Yeah. I know, but something else is equally important. So that was one.
To me, it's all about. Sorry, carry on.
Well, no, you carry on, because for you, it's all about, I guess, meeting the needs of the individual, because everyone is different. But I was going to say, for you, what are your autistic traits? If you were going to list five things that you display, what would they be?
God. My biggest flaw, I suppose, is my like imagination.
Okay.
Which is involved in things like self-care, and like organising, planning, prioritising, that sort of thing. I'm communicating. Sometimes I'm funny with how it comes in.
Okay.
So I'm all right at getting it out there. Maybe sometimes I get it out there in the wrong way as well. But sometimes bring it in as well. So sometimes tone of voice, body language can be, I can get it wrong. I've got some sensory problems. I hate certain, I'm funny with smells, like bloody scented candles and the shop Lush. I hate it.
Yeah, even just walking
past phony smells.
Even just walking past the door of Lush without going in, you can smell it.
I can't.
Yeah.
It makes me feel angry. It just makes me feel angry. I have a thing with food as well. Like, I reckon I'm a bit of a, I tend to be crave a lot of senses.
Okay.
So I'm quite, so I like to stretch a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Fidget. I have to, so I do crave some certain, like food, like certain foods and certain textures, like, and I sometimes like to have, I use senses, sensory stuff as a bit of a boost sometimes. Weird. So like if I was a bit down, a bit tired, a bit, I used to like buy, you'd probably say it's sugary sweets, but I find the scent, it was what's picked me up when got snapped me out of it. So like I'd have like something really fizzy or sour.
Right.
And I'd eat it and I'd be like, woo!
Yeah.
And it just sort of, okay, snap me out of it and stuff. So I used to do that as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I suppose that's my thing. I'm probably, there's probably a lot more if you ask other people.
What are you like on touch, like tactile? Are you tactile or not tactile?
I like fidget toys and stuff like that, but I'm not really that bothered by it.
But I mean, like other people, are you a hugger?
No.
No.
I don't hug a lot of people. I never offer to hug.
Uh-huh.
But if somebody wants one, I'll do it.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense.
I would never offer one.
Yeah. Yeah, you get into that whole territory. I'm a bit like that with hugging, that when my friends get together, they all hug, and I'm not a big hugger. And then sometimes one of them will hug you, and then the next time you're like, oh, God, have I got to hug them? It like sets the rules of hugging. It's a, can be a bit of a minefield.
It's up to them. It's up to them. If I don't offer hugs.
Yeah. Okay. So, autistic genius, why that name?
It just made me laugh. and it is. You know, autistic people were all savants, weren't they, at one point? You know, they were all able to count the 200 matchsticks on the floor, weren't they? And, you know, like...
The whole kind of...
Like Dustin Hoffman in Rain Man.
Yeah. But that's...
It's a play on it.
A play on it, because that's not a realistic view either, is it? It's, you know, a lot of people, I think, get frustrated when Rain Man's associated with autism, because that makes it seem like everyone with autism has some kind of special maths calculation.
To be fair with Rain Man, it's based on a real person.
It is.
I mean, like, Dustin Hoffman was playing a real person, so you can't... So somebody with autism is like that, and I suppose it's... You can't 100% blame people for thinking that condition's the same with everyone, because all the conditions are, a lot of them, not the medical ones, like all the ones that we are aware of. So I suppose it's just naivety on that.
Yeah, but, I think that's right, because like you say, anything else medical, it's usually that's what you've got and that's it. Whereas with autism, it's such a spectrum. And if people don't understand that, then Rain Man's what they understand.
Exactly, yeah. Or the other thing, Sheldon, or... Well, Sheldon, supposedly, and God knows what else. So, yeah, pretty.
So, yeah. Are you a genius?
No, not really. I always say, people always actually tell me off.
Oh, really?
I've had backlash. Not because I use the word autistic, because I use the word genius. I've been told I'm arrogant for calling myself genius.
Oh.
I hate people when they call themselves a genius. I think it's nasty. And I just say, I don't claim to be a genius, I'm just only autistic.
Yeah.
Take it.
But it's like, it's tongue-in-cheek a bit, isn't it? It's a bit of humour,
yeah,
rather.
Yeah, but like I said, the autism community.
Yeah.
They take things so literally.
Yes.
And you know, like another things, autism, I get told off by doing a video about something, how my autism's affecting me, and somebody could put on autistic, that doesn't happen. And I go, well, it did to me.
Yeah.
Because
So,
and that's another big problem with it. You got a bunch of people who are diagnosed and undiagnosed, because for every autistic child, there's an autistic parent.
Do you believe that?
I genuinely believe that, yeah. And I've seen it. I've seen the way people are in the community, the way they talk sometimes, yeah. And like, people are so narrow-minded. And it's like, you've got a community of people who really want help and really need assistance and want to talk about autism, but they're so narrow-minded, some of them, because they just can't help it. This is the way autistic people are. They're like that. It's their way or no way. And then when they hear a new idea about autism, that's not relevant to them. It's not true. Or it's no, no, no.
Yeah.
And that's where the arguments start. Yeah. Because you see it, like the way they talk, you think, God, what is it? That's what it is.
Yeah.
It's so bizarre.
So on the parent-child autism thing, would you think your mum's got autistic traits?
No, it's my dad.
Your dad?
My mum has got some traits. My mum does things that I think, hold on a minute, that's an autistic thing to do.
Mm.
But I do it as well. So it could just be because everybody has traits. So I think I've taken some things off my mum. But I'd say my dad. Right. My dad's side.
Okay. That's very fascinating. Because sometimes you see people that, you know, you've got a parent and maybe they've got more than one child who's been diagnosed. And I find that interesting as well.
My wife is autistic. Was autistic. We are convinced that the middle sister is also autistic. And they all think it's from the dad.
Right. Interesting.
So, I don't know how Tasman wasn't picked up. It's just ridiculous. She's got this list of things wrong with her. Like, she's this, she's that, she's this, she's that. I've got the diagnosis, but if they just said autism, it's all covered.
Yeah, so she...
And I tell her, I said, if you were just diagnosed with autism, all these things are part of it. And she goes, then she would say, yeah, but it's one of them, isn't it?
So is she not officially diagnosed?
She was officially diagnosed when we started going out.
Right.
Not long after we started going out with each other, yeah. So
okay.
Very late in life.
Yeah.
But the brother is very bizarre because he had an illness which caused a brain injury, I think.
Okay.
Don't know the full story. And he has a learning difficulty and he's high-functioning autistic.
Okay.
So he's got a learning difficulty, which meant he had to go to like specialist schools, but he's also high-functioning autistic. So he has learning difficulty, which means he learns at a much younger age than what he is, but he's high-functioning autistic. And it's really weird.
Wow. That's a bit mind-blowing. Yeah.
But I always I always think that if he didn't have that infection or illness when he was younger, he would be a high-functioning autistic. And he would have done it all, but just, it's so weird.
Yeah.
Like, because he is so, comes across more than what is, he's capable of a lot. And it's because of him, it's like he's got a learning difficulty, which means he struggles to learn things, which is fine, whatever. But he's not dumb.
Hmm.
No way. But the things he remembers, you think you've got a learning difficulty. It's amazing.
Yeah, brilliant. So going back to the autistic genius thing, how did that come about? When did it start?
I suppose I'll go. I did a talk.
Mm-hmm.
18, 19, Matt, I think. First ever public talk. I had to write. It was all about, they wanted to interview me basically, but like I said, they couldn't ever pin me down because of just college and time, the timetable. So I just said to her, I'll just go. If they want me that badly, I'll go. And then she put, and I was like, okay, they might not. And I went, and they asked me to do it. And they asked me to write a speech, I had to do a presentation about this, and about it, and stuff. I was like, okay, it's fine. So I wrote a speech, went and did it, and it was amazing. It went really well. It was like, everybody was laughing, and I was like, what's going on? This is amazing. And then I did it. I did a talk, so then I was like, yes, so I can talk, I can do the talking. Did a few more for college. Ended up working for Children's Services as a specialist support worker at the college, which was really good. It was a 0-hour contract.
What did you enjoy about that?
That was amazing. It was just like supporting kids, supporting young adults at the college. So essentially I was supported by the service, and then I left college and then become working for them. So it was almost like I was doing what they used to do, and I used to provide the support. It was brilliant.
Great. And it was media you did at college, was it?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So, and I ended up supporting in performing arts.
That's right.
So it was good because I wanted someone to be involved.
Yeah.
And do it more and stuff. I was like, yeah, cool. But it was really good. And where was I? Oh, yeah, and then I left, obviously, and ended up becoming a nursery nurse. Watch it. Big change, which is good. I did that for a few years.
Enjoy it?
Different nurseries. Pardon?
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah. The thing is I don't like is the clickiness. As lovely as ladies are, I found them harder to work in that environment, very hard to work for.
Okay.
And I find that with children, everyone has their own way of doing things. They have their own philosophy. And I just wanted to be left to, I always found that I was better off when I was just left to get on with it.
Yeah.
And left to just walk the way I'm, and you just can't be left alone. You're not left alone. You're always, there's always somebody around, always someone saying that's not right, that room. It's just like, just go away.
Yeah.
And because everyone's a bit panicky.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's a great environment. And then I did that. And then while I was there, I wanted to get back into autistic, working with autistic adults like I was. So I just made a Facebook page, did it for a few months, 5 months, 100, 200 likes at best. And it was just a way of linking my CV to it so they could just go and see that I didn't know what I was talking about.
Okay.
So all the CVs were emailed and stuff like that. And then one day I just got a lot of footage that I did at college about autism, put it all together, made a 5-minute video about what autism is, and it just exploded.
Very good.
And then you guys come along, we're like, yeah, we'll give you free stuff because we want you to do well. And then that really helped it. I remember, I think it was you guys who just sent me a message saying, if you get to 1,000 likes by the end of the week, we'll give you this prize to give away. I was like, all right, cool. And then you messaged me again like 2 days later, yeah, scrap that, you're going to get to 2,000 now, so I'll give it to you now.
Yeah, fantastic. Great.
Everyone was like, and I was getting phone calls like, oh, yeah, do you want to be an ambassador for our charity? Oh, yeah, do you want to do this? And I was like, what?
Brilliant. Yeah, and you are an ambassador for a charity, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Autism Puzzles in Wales. They're brilliant.
Are they? Tell us a bit about
them.
I
think they were slightly involved with the Richard and Jacko.
Okay, yeah.
Because he's done work with the charity because his son's seeks support from them because he's Welsh.
Yeah.
And he's he did like some drama sessions for them, and they do some mad stuff.
Yeah.
Some really good stuff. Like the stuff they tell me, I think, why is this not happening everywhere else? It's amazing.
Like what?
I think the weirdest thing she told me, apologies, it's going to be a swear word, they do a wanking workshop.
A what?
A wanking workshop, they called it.
Really?
And that's what they called it. And it used to be basically, they used to have teenagers with autism and their parents, and it was sex education.
Oh.
But they called it a wanking workshop because it was just funny, and it was like, it just kind of lightened the mood.
Okay, right. That sounds better than the image I had. I imagine.
I know, we should call me on what you want.
Okay, wow, that's good. Because that, I know, is something that isn't spoken about a lot as well, is, you know, when
going on.
Yeah, puberty and all of that sort of stuff, because perhaps having sensory challenges and then going through all those changes can be very, very difficult for people on the spectrum.
But like, it needs, because when you taught it at school, you talk about the science of it. I suppose from that, if you don't really look into it or have no desire to look into it,
yeah,
you're not going to know.
No.
So it's important, really.
Yeah.
And a lot of kids as well have autism, especially if they're not in mainstream, won't be taught until they're very late in life.
Yeah.
So a lot later. So it's quite a... But I thought it was so funny when she told me.
That's brilliant. Very good. So now, what's the dream? Where's Autistic Genius going?
Don't know yet. it's a bit up and down because it was like, whoa, and then it dipped, and it's hard work. The thing, my problem is all the other people who are doing what I do on Facebook and YouTube are at their best in those formats, I find. Some of them I've seen talk live, and they're very good. Mm. They're at their best, and I'm at my best live. So I always find that my real, I don't know, in my opinion, I'm not fully what I am unless there's an audience. That's where I'm at my best, because that's how I started. So ideally, if I had the dream, it would be nice to have a my own show at the Fringe and just do the whole month and just do the Fringe and build up a profile there. But I used to do just shows, raise money for charities or for myself, because I haven't got a lot of money. But and then do my own shows. But the really nice thing, if I could do it, if it would be to be like have a film, like a documentary.
Yeah.
That was autism, but it was only with people with autism. And it was them telling us what it is to be autistic and what it means and what it is and stuff. And obviously, you have to cover all bases, but that would be nice.
Yeah.
Very nice.
And what is the message that you're trying to send out to the world?
I suppose all it really is, people want to know what autism is and how it affects people. They'll ask you if they want to know that.
Mm.
But I think everybody just needs to know that autism is that it's just a different way of thinking. It's not better, it's not worse. It is just different, and there's nothing. And just listen, because we can talk. We have voices, a lot of us. We have, even the voices that can't be heard, there is a voice in there.
Yeah.
And we need the right support for people to get it out. So, but just listen, please.
Yeah. No, that's great. That's good. So so how did you meet your wife then? When did that happen?
Well, it was a couple of years, a year and a bit ago. 2 years, sorry. Over 2 years now. We're just in a choir. And she was going for ages.
Yeah.
I started, did a bit, and then she started. And we always stood directly opposite. I was kind of interested in her, but I wasn't in a... I didn't want to live with anyone. I didn't want to be like, I just wanted to just whatever.
Yeah.
Just get on with life and do what I want. Because I was living on my own, really independent. Like, whoa, yeah. So I was kind of man behaving badly. And I lived on my own like that for 3 years. And then we just chatted and we weren't friends really. Nothing major. She had a boyfriend. I was single. I wasn't being a home wrecker or anything. We were just chatting. And then she just said, like, she was just being a friend. And she was just like, I don't know what to do. I'm not really happy. And I said, you can always say something. And she was like, well, I better not. And I was like, okay, we'll leave it then. And then suddenly out of nowhere, she just went, I'm not. We split up. I was like, that's a shame and stuff. And she was like, yeah. And then we just got closer. And then 2 years later, we bought a house, got married, got pregnant, got a dog. He's behaving himself.
I think I saw him pass, actually. What type of dog is he?
He probably did. He's asleep. But that's basically it. And it's, I've got too much going on. I've got, a new job. Since I've been with her, I'm on my second job because I wasn't happy where I was working, so I changed.
Yeah.
And I moved somewhere else and I'm really bored where I am, so I'm changing jobs again.
Right.
So it's just been manic.
Yeah, because I know, like in our community, we have a lot of people that have are parents with children who've either got diagnosis or going through diagnosis, and you see a lot of chat about them worrying about the future. Will my child ever be able to live independently? Will they ever be able to have that kind of normal life? And from the outside looking in, you're happily married, you're about to have your first baby, you've got a job, you can stand up on stage and do amazing things. So is there a message from you that everything's possible?
Yeah. I always say this as well. I always say to parents, I worry about my child not being able to get married or do this, get married or The big one is marriage. I always find that getting a job is difficult, but I think because they know that their kid could do something,
yeah,
they don't see them as they're not unable to achieve things. So I think that one of the things that I keep hearing about is getting grown up, getting married. I think it's because I've done that. Another one thing I always say is, why are you worried about them getting married? And he goes, they don't need to.
No, you're right.
Why do they need to? We only need to get married because we've grown up thinking that's what happens. That's what we're told.
Yeah.
I grew up with my mummy, daddy, and that's what it is. Kids mm-hmm. are just told that you grow up, you get married, you move out, you get this, you get that. You don't need those things. You don't need those things. You don't need to do it. The only thing you really need to do is find a job.
Well, I think the thing that most people worry about is them being able to survive independently of the family unit.
That's totally, I get it, but...
Yeah.
Totally get that. But I think that my mum said the same thing about me. And you just got to be patient, consistent to... Like, to the point where you think, oh my God, I'm splitting hairs. And it's difficult. But if you're consistent and you stand your ground and you keep pursuing them to be independent, they will be independent. And also as well, I think the most difficult thing with somebody who is autistic or considered vulnerable is harder to let go, isn't it? And let them figure it out for themselves. Because all the things that I do now... As much as my mum's done a lot and my pet and my stepdad and everybody else around me, most of the things I've learned that I've needed to get by are actually learned the hard way. And that's just, I'm on my own.
Yeah.
And it is, there comes a point where it's tough. And I think the thing is with autism, like I've said, there's no imagination potentially. So you need to teach them what to do in these situations. So when they do happen, it's up there, it's stored. And that's what happens with life. Something stressful. When you first come across it, it's stressful. You think, oh my God, am I going to be that? But every time it keeps happening, it just gets easier and becomes the norm.
Yeah. So from what you're saying, maybe a tip to help people move towards independence would be to plan for almost every eventuality.
Try and have to plan.
Yes. And if there's a plan, then it becomes less scary. So exactly. If someone's living on their own and, I don't know, the lights go out because the fuse has blown, then you've got a plan in place to deal with that and they know the steps they have to follow, that sort of thing.
But also as well, they don't have to have a plan in practice. You can say, if something's gone wrong and you don't know what to do, call this number, call me.
Yes.
And I'll come. I'll tell you what to do. The next time you won't need to call me because I've just shown you what to do.
Yeah. Yeah,
and even if they have to call you again next one, they do, and eventually, that's I think that's what it is, and that's how it starts, and that's what every and I think also another thing that people need to be told is that what I've just said is a really good technique for an autistic person, but that's what everybody does.
Yeah,
I guarantee you, everyone who's moved out of their mum's house has gone, oh God, what do I do? Ring them, and it's done, and mum's like, oh yeah, that happens all the time. This is what you do.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It's not... Everything my mum has done for me is not because I'm autistic, it's because that's what you do.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think parents need to... I think sometimes it's difficult to think, oh my God. And I get it, it's tough. Well, I don't get it, I will do. But I know it's tough because I've seen how the mothers who are just like struggling, they look like they've not slept in 5 years and I don't know how they do it, but... They're not doing anything else that no other good parent would do.
No.
And what they're helping them. And that's what they've got to realise. And so if they realise that they're not doing anything any different that any other parent is doing, I think they'd be all right. I think they realise. I think it needs to be. I think what they do needs to become normalised and how they help. Even if it means that you do the same things more often than what other parents would do, you're still doing the same as what everyone does.
Yes. That
comes across. That's my mum and other things. That's what I see.
I think that makes an incredible amount of sense. You're right. There isn't much difference between a parent of a neurotypical child and the things they would put in place to support their child on a big step. It's no different. It might be that, like you say, you need to do a bit more of it. a bit more frequently, perhaps before it's clicked, but essentially it's the same steps. Yeah.
My mum, the thing is with me, I wasn't diagnosed young, which I think has worked in my mum's favour and my favour, because I wasn't raised, because I always find that people, when they're autistic, they kind of worry more, which is fine, I get it. And they need to find out everything.
Yeah.
They need to Google everything, do this and that. And because my mum never had that label, the only thing she had was me.
Mm-hmm.
So she focused on me and learned how to deal with me.
That makes a lot of sense.
There's no point in going, I need to know everything about autism, you don't. You need to know everything about your kid. Because I guarantee you, I could read 500 books about autism and they may not, but they might not even be relevant.
To you, totally, because it's everyone's so different with it.
And that's all it is. And autism is general. And the thing is with autism, it's not talked about. It's difficult to discuss autism in an impartial way, or because it's so different for everyone. You've got, I find it very difficult. The one thing I've managed to do, is take the really the issues, like the autistic traits, where they've written books that big. I had a woman talk to me about the theory of mind, and I showed one of my videos about the theory of mind, and this woman just looked at me and just went, how have you done that? So what do you mean, you've just nailed the theory of mind in 3 minutes? And I go, it's like obvious. And she's like, but I got a book from the Open University like that called The Theory of Mind, and you've just done that book in a 3 minute video.
Well, see, there are some advantages to literal thinking and talking, aren't there?
That's what, like, I take information, I just... Sorry.
That's all right.
The dog. Hi there. Sorry, you have to remind the postman.
That's all right. Hello, what sort of dog? What type is he?
He's classed as a Chi Chi. So he's a Chihuahua and a Chinese Crested.
Oh, he's lovely. What's his name?
This is Socks.
Socks. Has he got socks?
He's more popular than I am.
He's fab.
He's got to have a dog and talks.
Yeah.
People with stuff. Yeah.
He's lovely. So you said that you met your wife at a choir. So you sing?
Not really. It's just, I don't really sing now. I just do it for a laugh. It's just something to do, isn't it? It's a way to get me out of the house, really.
Yeah.
And it's just good fun. So, but she was there. Just dumb luck, yeah.
Yeah.
I did a lot of stuff in the past, but I'm not really.
Not a big singer.
I just. I just did it for fun.
Right, I was going to ask you to give us a rendition of something. Okay. Right, I can't believe we've been talking almost an hour. I've so enjoyed it, but I've got one. It's so easy to chat to you. One question that I'm going to ask everyone, which is, imagine you've got a desert island and you can employ your own laws on it. So it can be autism related or just related to the world. What three things would be the laws, the most important laws you would introduce in a new society?
One, keep your hands to yourself. Best rule I've ever come up with working with children.
Yeah.
Keep your hands to yourself. Two, I suppose... Well, okay, so I've got one. Treat people the way you want to be treated.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess three, I don't know what the third one would be. It's difficult.
Might be ban.
I suppose it's just...
Ban love.
I think it would just be like a... I think it would just wouldn't be necessarily be a law. And I think it would just be like we're all in this together. Like, we're all the same. Just
Great.
Think that way.
Yeah.
Always,
all equal.
Just always help when you can. Something like that.
Great.
I suppose.
Yeah. And maybe a fourth law would be ban lush. Banish Lush. Yeah. Yes. And one last thing, through everything that you know about yourself and your journey, if there was one thing that you worried about that now in hindsight you think, I wish I hadn't worried about that. It's not a big deal. So for other people that are maybe going through diagnosis or a journey of some sort related to sensory processing disorders, what would you say? Don't sweat it. You see people get het up about something and you think it's actually insignificant in the grand scheme of things.
I'd probably say you don't need to do all the things that you think you do. You don't need to get married. You don't need to have this. You don't need to do that. A lot of people get worked up on what they consider to be what people do when they grow up, which is what happens with your kids. You grow up as kids and you say, I'm going to get a girlfriend, I'm going to get married, I'm going to have a house, I'm going to have a good job, I'm going to have this. And everybody gets to a point where they realise, actually, all these things aren't going to happen.
Yeah.
And I suppose with autistic people, it can take a lot longer for it to happen. And I would probably say, you know what? As long as you earn enough to survive and eat and do what you want, it's all you need.
Yeah.
All you need. Don't get worked up on the extras. Everything else will fall into place.
Great tip.
If you're it.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's we get bogged down with the things we think we should have rather than the things we need. Yeah.
Exactly. The only thing that everybody has to do is earn money.
Yeah.
They have to have money. I mean, that's it. If you can't get that, then you will, you know, be in a bad place.
Yeah.
But that's the only thing that you really, really need to worry about, is just finding a job.
Yeah, fab. So, do you know what you're having, baby-wise? Do you know, have you found out?
Not a clue.
So, going to be a surprise. And what...
I will.
Yes. Have you got any kind of, I guess, being an autism parent, does that make things different to someone who's going to face labour and delivery and parenting, or is it just no different?
I used to get parents' family because the way I am, like autism and stuff, is, are they going to raise your child like it's an autistic child? And I'm going, no, this is a child. My wife is very future.
Yeah.
Well, I'm very much now, which is a classic autism thing. So she's very over the top future. Whereas I'm all about now.
Yeah.
So I'll just take each day as it comes.
Great. Good.
But I'm not stressed about them being autistic.
No.
I'm not talking about it. Oh, I don't care.
Yeah.
So,
it's not something you can...
We were talking about anything. Like, she'd have in all the jabs, the tests. And she said, what would happen if you had a baby with Down syndrome? But like, oh, it'd be fun.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it doesn't bother me. It's just, you know, no matter who the kid, what the kid is, it's good days and bad days.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think it's very exciting, and we'll keep an eye out for your news when it comes. So, yeah. Well, all that remains is to say thank you very, very, very much for spending so much time with us. Really enjoyed it. I'm pretty sure that our community are going to get lots of hints and tips and really interesting information from it. So really appreciate you taking the time.
No, you're welcome, Jenny.
All right. And, yeah, we'll hear about this baby when it arrives. Okay.
Oh, yeah, you will.
Yeah.
That'll be all over the place, but like a rash, yeah.
Yeah, excellent. Cool. Right, well, I'll leave you to it, and we'll catch up soon, no doubt.
Thank you very much. See you soon, Jenny.
All right, thanks. Bye. Bye.
Bye.
So that was Tom and me chatting, and just how lovely is he? I just love him to bits.
He is amazing. I'm so glad he hasn't left Facebook, because Facebook just wouldn't be the same without him.
It really wouldn't, and I just love everything he's got to say. He makes so much sense, so we hope you all got something out of that. Now, next week, we're chatting to Stickman Communications and the lovely Hannah. So she's got all sorts of fab things to share with you about how visual aids and communication can help. So that's something you definitely want to look out for. And the full version, as ever, will be in the VIC group. So if you're not a VIC member yet, sort it out. Come and sign up, because it's worth it. It's really fab.
And it's definitely growing. We're getting more and more members every week.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I keep saying every week, and maybe by the time one of these airs, it will actually be live, we're shifting things about and there's some really amazing stuff coming, which we'll share with you as soon as we can.
Yeah, everything's really exciting at the moment.
It is indeed. So have a good week, everybody, and we will see you next week for our next episode of Sensory Matters. Bye.
Bye. You know what?